For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
What is up, everybody? Welcome into In the Bag, episode 102. Yeah, we are live. You guys are going to notice that we're in a little bit of a different setup here. I can look directly at my camera. I don't look too orange because I'm on nice cameras, because I'm here at Foundation HQ, and I got the boys with me.
What's up? Yeah, and we are not in two separate locations or two different rooms. Robbie's right here beside us, but
he's right there.
Brad and I could literally hold hands.
Yeah, we could do that.
Yeah, it's
Jason could if he really.
You're making me jealous. I could hold Brad's hand, and by proxy, I'm holding Robbie's hand. If we're all holding hands,
that's true. That's true.
We'll avoid that.
Well, either. We're on this together, as they say, and we're talking about High School Musical before this. That's why I said that. I finally watched it for whatever reason, but hey, it's okay. We are here together today because we did the third battle of the bag draft. I don't remember what exact episode that is. I'll link it in the description when we post this, but, we've done a couple different iterations of the bag draft. The first one, remind me what the first one was, gentlemen.
We drafted for me and it was disc. We talked about
Discs that we've referred to guests on the podcast. And yeah, I drafted for myself. Robbie drafted for Jason. And then we let Jason choose the course blind.
Yep.
Because I guess that was fair. So Jason did well. He smoked me on that one. Second episode, we did a snake draft. It was Robbie and I again.
One manufacturer per something.
One manufacturer per slot in the bag.
Yep.
Correct.
Yep.
So that one was kind of interesting. I did win that one. So we were at 1-1-1 and we wanted to do a tiebreaker. Now, am I saying there's only going to be 3 episodes of this? I don't know. Let us know below. But Robbie, I'll let you take it over. This one was an interesting video as well. First time Jason got to draft his bag, which was nice.
Yep, he did. And unfortunately, the limitation was I put 4 discs and we did a 9-disc bag draft. But I had basically sets of 4 going through some of the slots of a balanced bag. Or I don't even know. I don't think I planned it for a too balanced of a bag. Like when I had the 4 options, it wasn't like, oh, these are all 4 overstable fairways. It was like,
right
here are, because even as y'all were playing yesterday, I noticed like some differences, and there were shots that both of you throughout the round were like, I don't have the disc that does this shot, but like the other guy ended up having it. So I want to go ahead. This contextually for people is going to be dropping. This is dropping Friday. And so next Thursday, the episodes are going to be, or like the round itself is going to be dropping. So we're going to be discussing what happened during all of this. And I was talking with Jason about this last night. I think there's 2 perspectives to take. If you are someone that wants to hear about the experience and have the enrichment of knowing what they were thinking, what was going through their heads, so you'll know the results, but you'll have added context to it, keep listening. If you're like, hey, I want to see it fresh and then hear their thoughts on what went down, pause, time out, and then come back and join us next week. And you'll have it available to you before episode 103 drops. So that's our promise to you.
Yeah, and I think it's good to know also, like, the front 9 is going to be dropping on Robbie's channel, per usual. And we've been teasing it for a while. The back 9 will actually be dropping on the In the Bag YouTube channel, which we just, again, we're starting, we're going to post extra content there, reels, things like that. This will be the first version of something like that. So excited. There'll be many more. And then, you know, probably the week following, we're going to kind of throughout the month of May wean off, the main podcast channel over to the In the Bag YouTube channel. And by June 1, we're going to be completely off of the Foundation podcast channel. So really important that, we get all your support over there. Again, we're going to link it below. Make sure you go over, subscribe, make sure you like everything's over there. The faster we get that spun up, the more content we can, more time we can take to put content over there. So
for sure,
we appreciate you. I just want to caveat that, Robbie.
Yeah, no, I think that's important. So we did a 4-disc draft battle. So I picked the four, or we did a 9-disc draft battle, 4 discs in each slot. And I picked the discs that were in the different pools, and I picked the location, or do we kind of, like,
you chose a location.
Okay. Yeah, at the end,
you chose the location. You'd already written it down and put it underneath your iPad. That day.
Yeah.
That way we didn't know, but you knew.
Okay. Okay. So, spoiler shield, flashing now. This is your last chance, because the round has happened. And I, while we're chatting, Jason, can you text me the scorecard just so
it's in your text already?
The man is too good. Here we go. So
I didn't text you because you can access it. Yeah. You did.
So I got it.
Okay.
So we're going to talk through kind of what happened, and some thought processes. I was thinking through some questions, wrote some questions out, and wanted to kind of dive through it. But, let's start with an easy one heading into, and I asked both of you in the video, how are you feeling heading into this challenge? 1-1. How are you feeling about your bags? Like, just give us your thoughts heading in.
Okay, I'll jump in. Jason went first on the video. I'll jump in first here for the audio. So going into the round, I felt really good. I came off a really solid round at Hideaway the week prior, and I was throwing really well. I felt like my releases were really good. I feel like I was, like, pretty smooth, and I was hitting gaps and things. So peaks, longs, I think, can be deceptively hard, but in my mind, it's always probably easier than it is, I think. But you do have to hit some gaps. You do have to make sure you have some shapes. So that didn't really worry me. I was pretty confident there. Robbie asked us kind of like our upper third, middle third, lower third. So I think I said my upper third was like, I think I said 5 under, which I've shot there before at longs. Middle, I think I said like 2-3 under, maybe, Robbie. And you'll have to watch the video. And then lower third, I think I said like even 1 over. That's where I thought like kind of my spread was going to be. But I felt pretty good. I felt pretty good with my bag. I felt like I had most of everything I needed. And there's a couple discs I could like lean on if I really needed to for that course.
Cool. Yeah. I was feeling okay. I've been up and down. We had this at that same weekly last week. Everything was slightly off, is how I described it. I literally, like, everything was slightly to the right or slightly to the left. And I chained out, I felt like, 8 times that day. Most of those were bad putts. I had one pure Gannon chain out in the hot. And so, but I shot 9 over. It was a really bad round, the worst round I've ever shot at Hideaway. So, like, when you shoot that blast that bad in your last round, you're like, okay. I've only played Peachview Longs a couple of times. It is very similar to shorts for those who played both. It's just a couple of them are a little bit longer and a little harder, as we'll talk about. And so I was actually thinking I could go blow up really bad here because I know that I have done that on Peachview Longs before. But with the disc I drafted, a couple of were already in my bag, so it made it easier. I mean, full disclosure, definitely made it easier. So I had that confidence in some of the shorter things that I was very confident in. I think my top third, I said 1-under to 3-under, or maybe 1-under 3, or maybe even to 3-under. And then my middle was even to 2 over. And then my lower third was 3 over and higher. And so my goal was to shoot even. Like, in my own personal goal is, if I can shoot even, I've had a great round. If I'm in my middle third, I'm very happy. But if I shoot even, I have a great round. So,
yeah. And I think I missed that part on mine, Jason. I think I said my goal was like 2 or 3 under. That's where I really wanted to shoot, because I thought that would give me room for some error. Like, there's a lot of like pars out there, but there's several birdies I could kind of attack, I thought, at least.
Yeah. So Peachview Longs is interesting, especially for lots of fans of the Foundation content. You're going to know Peachview Shorts because I feel like they play Peachview Shorts quite often for the content. So Peachview, for those of you who maybe you're not like so deep into the content, I know I have conversations with people before, like, oh yeah, you know that course because it looks like, or, and I've said the name of the course, and they're like, which video, like, what course is that? Peaks View is where hole one, you're like throwing down a hill, and the basket is tucked, the short is tucked just like below a tree. You kind of got to hit a gap. There's a walking path to the right. The guys film a lot of beginner challenges there, all sorts of things. The long basket's a little further. What's interesting to me about Peaks View shorts versus longs is Peaks View shorts, almost every hole on that course is birdieable. 17 is probably one of the hardest birdies to get for the shorts. It is arguably an easier when you play to the longs.
Yeah.
It's arguably easier. The ceiling's still there. There's more OB, things like that. But going into this, thinking from, I know I talk a lot about attack hole strategy and choosing where you want to hit. Peaks View longs, a lot of the holes that are out in the open, which are traditionally some of the easier birdies at Peaks View shorts, become significantly more difficult because of low ceilings. And there are so many holes, I feel like, that you have to clear a low ceiling, right, that is 250, 300 feet away from you in order to get close to the basket to have a putt. But the wood holes are not that much more difficult. A couple of them are, but lots of them are similar in difficulty of getting to the basket. So, gentlemen, how does it feel knowing that the open golf, like, because you've both played Peaks View shorts quite a bit. So talk about that feeling of knowing the only attack holes are going to be wooded hole options for me. What's kind of your thought process striking the course there for scoring?
I think what you kind of said it in the woods is really interesting, because the long baskets are typically like you kind of throw the same shot, I guess, direction shot as the short basket, but it's maybe like all a little farther to the left or a little farther to the right. So it's like they're not necessarily harder, I guess, but you have to really have discs or know that, or be able to throw the shape that, like, oh, okay, I need to throw this straight thing on a rope that fades or that turns to the right at the end. So I think that's the difficult part about that. I felt okay going in the woods. I think I underestimated a little bit on the open holes. Like, I knew hole one was, I can't get a birdie there. I knew hole two, I couldn't get a birdie. I knew four, I probably couldn't. I knew five, I couldn't. And I knew six. So I think that's really tough. Like, putting, and also it's not like easy pars necessarily either. Yeah. On those first six holes.
Yeah.
So not only can you not really birdie, you have to like pay attention that you don't mess up to get bogeys, because they're easy bogeys and they're not necessarily easy pars. A few of them, like hole two, is not an easy par, in my opinion.
Yeah. I agree. Like, it's so, Robbie encapsulated right, as did Brad, because when you play Peaks View shorts, normally it's like, oh, I can birdie one, I can birdie two, three, I can birdie shorts and longs, four, I usually don't birdie, but most people birdie it because it's a forehand hold. I'm working on my forehand. And then when you go up to that other one, there's no chance of me birdie. Like, I have no chance of birdieing one, none, not even a perfect shot. Par is hard, because if you don't make that first gap, you got to make a touchy upshot to even get the par. Hole two, birdieable for people who have unique shots, because it's right over a path that's OB, and then it's woods right beside it. I don't have that shot for a birdie, so I have no shot at birdie.
And a death putt.
And a death putt, right? Because I actually had a 35-footer, and I was like, but it's a death putt. I'm like, spoiler, I laid up on hole two because I was within putting range on the other side of the OB, but it's pure woods downhill behind it. So unless you make a better shot, hole four is the same way. It's so pushing in such a low ceiling, like Robbie talked about. It's not tough. I don't have distance, so there's enough courses I walk up to a hole and think I have no shot at birdieing, and I sometimes don't have shot at parring, and it's hard to think that's the five of the first six holes are that on this, and so you're trying to survive, and that was in my mind. I'm just trying to survive these first holes until we get in the woods, knowing, because we play shorts enough that a lot of the baskets are really close to each other. Like, it's just slightly different shot for a few of the holes. So, but I like the challenge of it. I play disc golf for fun, so I want to shoot under par. But every once in a while, I like being kind of crunchy and grindy and just see, hey, can I grind this out to do something okay?
I think the error I made thinking back to it is I really underestimated the low ceilings on this entire course. Well, really, it's really the open holes, like the first six. Like, to get a shot close enough to birdie or even an easy par, you have to like keep your disc pretty low to the ground.
Even 17 and 18, I mean, 18 because of the tunnel and the trees, it's not super low, but you have some lowness. Mm-hmm. So the open shots are a lot harder than you would think they'd be, being an open shot. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's I'm like trying to look through the wooded section versus, so if we like, so open holes, Brad was 4 over par through the open holes, and Jason through the open holes, you were even. Yeah.
Even, yep.
So that right there, and Jason ends up taking the dub by 5 strokes. So the open holes really did, were a major difference maker, because then we also look at like the wooded holes. Jason ends up 2 over. Yeah, 2 over in the woods, and Brad ends up 3 over in the woods. So the woods became a much tighter battle. And there's kind of a storyline on a couple of Brad's. There is an underlying, like, looking at how several of the bogeys happened for you, Brad.
Mm-hmm.
I have an easy answer on them. But one thing I want to talk about, and as we were discussing last night, so the Swanky disc golf guys were up here a week ago? Two weeks ago, probably.
Yeah. Now.
So
yeah,
when they were up here, they had the chance to stay with Jason, and Elizabeth, his wife, was telling us a story last night about how she was like, oh, they started talking disc golf, and I decided to jump. I had something to contribute. So she started saying, like, talking about upper, middle, and lower thirds. And they just kind of looked at her like, huh? What? And it's something that we talk about a lot on this channel, just because I think for amateurs, people look at the rating as a way to process the round. But the reason I like using the thirds is because often if our understanding of where our thirds are at are off, it can lead to an insane amount of frustration in how we approach the game, especially how Jason mentioned, like, sometimes you want to feel grindy, right? Like, you want to have that scoring. But if your upper, middle, and lower thirds are off, lots of courses that may, if those are too high, let's say, courses that are going to be grindy for you can feel even more challenging, because you might think, oh, I should be able to, like, just crush this course. Like, I can shoot under par in my middle third here. But reality, it might actually, to shoot under par, require your upper thirds to be a part of it. Peaks View being a great example. If y'all walked in and one of you was like, yeah, my middle third, I'm like 5 down, because really it's not too much more difficult than the shorts, there would have been some shock yesterday. So thinking about thirds, upper, middle, and lower, what would you say for both of you? Start with your lower third. What part of your game was in your lower third? And was there anything in your upper to middle that you felt like helped out your game?
I'll hit you first, Jason.
You want me to go first? Yeah. Okay.
I know what your answers are.
So I would say my drives were my middle third. So when I talk about middle thirds, I'm going to have some great shots. I'm going to have some bad shots. I'm going to have some, okay, I hit the fairway shots. It was for sure about that. I had a couple on one particular hole when I threw the Shaman, and I don't even like the Shaman, sorry Connor, yeah. I don't even like the Shaman, and I was like okay, I'm okay, and I walked up and I was 6 feet from the basket. I'm like, whatever, disc golf is weird, right? And so that's a great shot that I wasn't expecting to make, and then I hit it. I think I hit first available off 3 tees yesterday. Like, that's definitely lower third, because I usually don't hit first available on an easier course. I may not make a great shot, but then I hit first available 3 times, and so so that's what I call my middle third for yesterday. My upshots were middle to lower. I didn't have any great upshot yesterday. And I, because I have no distance in my arm, I tried to be better at approach shots. Better's putting quotes better, right? I'm still an average player, but I'm confident. I'm almost always confident in my upshots. That if I get to a certain spot, I can get it within 10 feet with these discs. I think I hit a few more trees than I really wanted to yesterday. And that's been consistent between the weekly last week. 2 weeks ago, we did a tournament at New London Longs, and my short game was terrible. It was just not where I – it was lower than what I was wanted it to be. And then putting for sure was my upper third, because I hit a lot of good putts. I was – confidence breeds confidence, and hitting a putt breeds confidence. I did have a couple of shanks. That was my old putting style, and as soon as I let go, and I was like, oh, that's my old putt. Heiser putt, missed the basket by 10 feet. but I would definitely putted really well yesterday. I replicated Brad's putting from Hideaway last week. At the weekly, Brad hit literally every putt he stepped up to, whether it was 30 feet or in, and that's the way I felt and did. I missed one long one, and I missed a short 10-footer while I was squatted, but that was definitely the best putting round top to bottom I've ever had, because I wasn't throwing great. I had a few close shots, but I was hitting putts yesterday. So it was definitely upper third for putting. My drives, I would love to say they're lower third, but it was middle third, because I had some good drives, I had some normal drives, and I had a couple bad drives. And then my upshot was middle to lower. I didn't make any amazing, maybe one or two amazing upshots, but it was, I had more hit another tree in front of me as well. It was hole six or hole seven. I hit first available, and then I literally hit the tree that's almost right in front of me again, even though I had a wide open fairway to go. So those are my three. What about you, Brad?
Well, I think you kind of alluded to it. My bottom third yesterday, which I think is what killed me, was my putting. I could not hit a putt to save my life, and that's atypical. I finally got my putt back, like Jason said, at Hideaway. Like, that's like, I felt like my old putting self again. Jason's seen me play for a long time. Like, I used to be a pretty solid putter. That was probably one of my strengths of my game, and like, for a year, I kind of lost it, and then I got it back recently, which just felt great, and I cannot putt to save my life yesterday. And Robbie, even like jokingly off camera, was like, hey, switch to the Polecat at some point. And I just didn't. I probably should have. Because I was putting with the inner core and it just wasn't working. And the inner core is a great disc. I threw it really well yesterday off the tee.
Yes.
It was like I leaned on it pretty heavy on a lot of shots. But I could not putt. There's something about it that just like messes with my putt. And I don't know what it is. So my putting was definitely my my lower third. I would say my middle third was probably like off the tee. I feel like I did a pretty okay. Like I don't, it was probably like if I can say a higher middle third, maybe you would all agree. Yeah. Like, I don't know that I would say it was like up in my upper third, but it was definitely not like bad. Like it was just pretty okay. Just all around. Had some really solid shots. Had some like pretty okay shots. I don't know that I had like any really bad shots. I'm trying to think if I had any really bad.
You didn't
shots.
Hit any. I don't think you hit any first available. Like
no, I didn't,
at
no.
all yesterday. So.
No, I had a couple. Yeah. I think
the drive on really, 17 is literally the only one that I've
yeah,
think
yeah,
was like
OB. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and that was just a bad disc selection
yeah.
for what I was trying to do. Not bad disc, bad disc selection for like what I knew I was going to my error was going to be, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't feel comfortable saying I had anything in my upper third yesterday. I mean, my approach shots saved me a few times, but I feel like that's pretty consistent with my normal approach shots.
Yeah. From my assessment, I think that I agree with Jason, and putting was definitely upper third.
Yes.
Drives, middle. Yeah. Middle to, it was so interesting because approaches and drives for both of them were like middle thirds, but you had Brad was drives or approaches middle to upper, and then you had Jason with approaches middle to lower, because there were some decent approaches, but several times approaches were in a struggle, right? But Jason's putting was definite upper thirds, and Brad's putting was definite lower thirds. And so they didn't really necessarily, like, it was because Jason didn't really dip so low and Brad did dip low but didn't dip so high. I feel like that's why there was a bit of a disparity in the scoring, some might say. And when you can't putt, the confidence leaks to everywhere else on the course, because there's a stretch of holes that I definitely want to highlight, because I think that they really were the turning point that I feel like the air got drawn out of the round for Brad especially. And then like from there, it was the air got drawn out. Jason's confidence was at a crazy high. And then there was a little motion for Brad to get back in, and then the door got shut again. So let's see,
can I highlight one thing?
Yeah.
Also,
yeah,
I think putting became super important yesterday, because again, these long shots are like, okay, your par putt may be 25, 30 feet if you threw a couple good shots. So I think that's where you probably picked up a lot of strokes on me was, I'm thinking like hole six, for example, like, or hole seven. No, hole six. Hole six.
Hole six is one where, right, you parked your upshot and I had like a 25 footer. So,
yeah. Well, yeah. Well, and I would say I threw a good drive and I got pretty far.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you threw, like, you hit like
a short. Yeah. Yeah. It
was, but you, and you, then you cranked your A2 like way past the biscuit. And then I was like, okay, well, I'm, you know, I was like, what, probably 60 feet, 70 feet?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
We'll call it 75 feet. So, and I had like, I mean, I had a pretty open like chip forehand and I parked it. I was within maybe like 5 feet.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, great. I'm gaining a stroke on Jason going into the woods. I feel good. And then Jason's like wedged in between these trees, 25 plus long, and he just drains it. And it took the air out of my sails because I'm like, I'm not beating him today. I think at that moment, I was like, it's going to be a struggle to beat him today.
Yeah. So I want to talk about that stretch because the first couple of holes you have hole one, Jason plays a pre-textbook, knows he can't get the birdie. So he plays, he does get, I will say this, Jason had two moments on the course that were like the course definitely gave him a stroke or two.
Hey, you make your own luck. Hey, I'm a hunter. You make your own luck.
Here's the sidewalk. Here's the out of bounds. Here's Jason's disc.
Literally.
Yeah.
I was in bounds. So
he was touching grass. It was fair.
So there's a moment Jason goes, he's in bounds. So he lays up, throws the bird, puts it under the basket. Brad has like a 20 footer to start off, misses. And so there we are. Like, there's a stroke. Okay. No worries. Bounce back. Great to hold two, both par, and both had the opportunity of I could be aggressive here and wisely, like we talked about, death putts, roll away potential, all that. Both wisely lay up. Sick. Hole three, Brad discovers that I've given him a really straight pole cat, which was interesting as well, because I feel like, Jason, did you go wizard off that too?
Wizard, yeah. It was wizard.
Yeah. So they both threw shots that they wanted to fade, but they both threw them so straight that they just shoop, both sailed past the basket. Well, Brad sailed past the basket, so Jason gets a stroke on him there. And then we get to hole four. And
we will clarify, though, for those who watch, who know Peaks View, we did go for Peaks View short on three because we wanted the content to possibly get an eight.
Yeah.
We didn't go longs, and that may have changed stuff, but we all agreed, let's do shorts for the chance we can get an ace. So we did play shorts on three for those who know Peaks View.
For sure. If you got an ace potential, you got to go.
So that's, I mean, I would acknowledge that birdie was like a bonus birdie.
Yeah.
I mean, Brad had the same shot, but that longer one is longer, is harder to get a birdie because it's surrounded by trees. So even I acknowledge, okay, that's a... While we both had the same shot at it, I would take that. That's a bonus birdie. Not a luck birdie, but a bonus. I wasn't mentally thinking about, I'm going to get birdie on three because three longs, not super hard. It's the easiest for that six-hole stretch, but it's not as easy as shorts is.
For sure. It's like, I'm not going to say it's true poke and hope because the gap to the basket is pretty open, but it is 200-something feet down the fairway. So when you're trying to hit a gap that is the size of a door, 200 feet down the fairway, does get a little of the air of poking
and out. A lot of roll away potential.
Yeah,
for sure.
For the long.
So we get to hole four, and I think hole four is where the narrative to me starts to get really interesting. Just even one thing I'm excited for y'all to like really experience is we're going to describe what happens here, but when you can hear kind of the confidence shifting battle of how the words come out. So hole four, let's go, Brad, walk us through your perspective on hole four, and then Jason, you walk us through your perspective on hole four.
Okay. My perspective on hole four, I was attempting a particular shot and I kind of shanked it. I had an early release, but it didn't put me in any real trouble. Just kind of put me left of the fairway. I was like, okay, well, I have a forehand approach. I threw a forehand approach. I was within 10 feet. So I was like, feel pretty solid. Cause Jason threw his, You hit those trees on the left, right? To kind of push you down.
Well, I think I threw it into the ground. So if I, either way, I was short.
Yeah, real short. Yeah,
I was 70 feet off the tee, maybe.
Yeah, so. He threw his second shot first, and he threw it, and it from where I was, it looked pretty short. Like I thought it was like 40 short, and I was like, okay, cool. I even said I'm getting a stroke on Jason right here. I'm back in it, and so I threw my upshot, and I got like 10 feet, and I was like, okay, definitely got a stroke on him here, feeling good. We walk up to Jason's berg, and it's like maybe 30 feet, maybe 28 feet. It's not nearly as far as I thought it was.
Yeah, he's right. I don't think I hit a tree. I have sometimes the worst memory, but I was way short. Like I came up with that hole with knowing I'm not going to birdie, but I'm like, oh, this is a very easy par hole. Just throw it straight.
Yeah.
Because the shorts is slightly to the right, which requires a forehand, and I usually hit the tree. And so I'm like, okay, just throw it straight. And I think I had an early lease and just went into the ground. And then Brad's right. He got up there. He cleared the trees to the left, so he had an easier up and down. Because you have the geese. Brad has a great forehand, approach forehand. And so from where I was at, I was like, okay, I'm still 100 and something out. And I was even debating about what I was going to throw, whether it was going to be the wizard or the berg. And I was like, okay, I'm going to go with the berg because I can keep it low. I sometimes release the wizard a little high.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
I was still a little bit of a ceiling. And it was when it landed, Brad said, okay, I'm going to get a stroke here. And I was like, okay, maybe. I don't know. We're about to find out.
Did you think it was as far as I did or no?
I thought it was about 25 to 30 feet away.
I thought it was way farther. So that's why I said that.
Well, I think that's why I was surprised when you said that. I'm like, it's not. Okay. I was like, Brad has no confidence in my putting. Now, in his defense, he watched me play Hideaway last week. So he's actually speaking the truth at this point. Like, I cannot. It's the more we talk about this, Brad, it's funny how flipped it was. Because at Hideaway, Brad was throwing good, but not great. Your throws were not upper third, but his putting was upper third for Brad because literally he had hit everything pretty much. And that's almost the reverse for this because, like, and your putting was slightly off. And at Hideaway, I hit chains. I'm not kidding. Of the 20 holes, I hit chains, I think, 10 times and didn't go in. Mm-hmm. Most of those were off chains, but, like, it's funny to think about how different, how swapped those rounds are.
Yeah.
But, yeah, Brad said, I'm going to get a stroke. He's not wrong with that statement, again, based on how we just played a week ago. And I get up and hit a putt, and it, for those who play a lot, sometimes your putt just feels good. Like, it's the first time I really had to putt, and I'm like, oh, okay, it felt good. Like, everything came out the way it's supposed to. And so, yeah, so I did not lose the stroke in that hole.
Yeah, he made it, and you'll see in there, I think Robbie zoomed in on my face. I was just in shock, and I think I knew at that point I'm in trouble because I know my putt's not going to feel great. That missing that putt on the first hole messed with my head.
Yeah, I'm sure.
For sure.
It would have done for me as well. Like, oh my gosh. For me to be like, holy crap, I'm still in my face from last week if I'd have missed a putt like that.
Because so. I don't, even if I miss putts, I don't like air ball very much. And I don't think, I think I still hit chains on the right side, like kissed them.
Yeah.
But I was like, oh man, that was like almost an air ball. I'm like, and I, this is probably bad, but I'm like, I'm not changing my putt today and risking of changing my putt and messing with my normal game today. So I'm just going to try to adjust and just try my best.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's the kind of putt, especially where Brad on hole one, like the miss that happened is we're playing a 2-round tournament. We get back to Tournament Central, and the MA4 player is walking up to me telling me that he had 4 spit outs, and he's counting one of those as a spit out. When it's like, it hit right side chains, it hit chains,
yeah,
but it wasn't a spit out.
It was never going in the basket, ever, for any reason.
If it caught,
there was a fire.
That would have been incredible. Like, great basket if it catches. Disc catcher, it's in. But it was a prodigy, so hard push out of the basket. Okay, so the important details of, like, inspecting that is Brad saying, hey, I'm going to get a stroke. And he was like, or if I just throw this razor claw in, I get two strokes. And then he doesn't get either stroke. And I was wondering if he was like, oh no, I'm in trouble, because that definitely showed up on the next hole. So now we go to hole 5, and I'll fast forward you to the green. They both throw drives, and Jason on the box says, who birdies this hole? Grabs a Buzz SS, rips it down the middle. One of the most beautiful shots that I've ever seen. of all the videos that have been made at Peaks View Longs, probably the most beautiful shot that I've ever seen, pures it and ends up mid-circle two.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now, Brad throws similar shot, also beautiful, throwing a J, and it pushes and then fades out. So he's about 20, 25 further out than Jason is. And I even think I was like, I don't know if you're circle two or like just outside circle two, yeah, but Brad's got to look at the basket, can see Jason's a little bit in front of him. Play out the, let's play out the perspectives for there. Brad, you go first.
Well, I'm in a position where I'm like, I don't have, and I think I said in the video, I don't really have a jump putt. It's probably something I should maybe work on a little bit. And so I was just like, okay, well, I'm going to try for this because I had really no super real danger other than like it might roll back to me a little bit. So I tried. I did the jumper. I hit metal, I think, on that jumper. And it just, it, the sad part is I hit the jumper. I hit the metal, rolled back probably another, what, 20 feet or something like that.
Yeah.
So that was a little unfortunate. And then I, based on what Jason already did, I'm like, okay, well, I'm in trouble because he's going to sink this one probably.
I didn't, spoiler, I did not. I had, the confidence hadn't quite got there yet. Not that I would have sunk it, let's be clear, because it's still like middle of circle two. But I also did a jump putt, and it was a little bit of my old putt that came out of that, but I was close enough to make a 10-footer or something after that. So I didn't, the confidence went in my head, and so I got there thinking, and I think that my jumper is not that great either, but I'm okay doing a jumper because sometimes it's good and sometimes it's not, and it hyzered out. But I, after that, I'm like, okay, I'm just going to get my par and be good to go with it.
Yeah. And spoiler, it's just a 20 footer and I hit chains on the right and did not make that putt as well.
Yeah. And there was a, because part of this, Jason and I got to the chance, I stay at Jason's house when I come into town. So part of this, I reflected out loud, trying to process for today. And I was like, there was a comment that Brad made on that hole. And I'm sure it was a joke, but I don't know if you remember making this comment, no, but Jason also remembered it. So, it stuck out as a, oh, I think this is really where Brad, the mental, it started to show, like you could see that it wasn't, that you felt it was slipping away already. Mm-hmm. So much so that when that roll away, like you hit the cage and it rolls out and then Jason is like approaching his putt and you said, am I still out? Asking Jason, were you still out?
Even though you were clearly, you were in circle one, but I think that it was a joke, half frustration that you had that roll away, right? That like, there's no way I'm going to roll away 25 feet.
Yeah.
But you did, you probably didn't realize it, but you said it and I was like, no, Brad, you're not. I don't think I said anything. I was like, I was still out of circle one, but that's the frustration at that moment.
Yeah, because I saw it hit and roll, and I just didn't even look at it.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, great, here we go.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're right, because like I was in that mentality of like, well, whatever the worst thing's going to happen is going to happen right now to me, clearly.
Yeah. So, which is a place that if you guys play disc golf long enough, you'll get there on a course.
Yes.
We're going to play Heritage today. and if those of you who watch Foundation content, like, that is the course that for Course Conquest, they had to play four times to try to beat. I guess, do we count it as five times considering they literally restarted?
I think it's four counting
the Well, it's four videos.
Four. Yeah, you're right. So maybe five. Yeah, yeah, it was more than one.
But they attempted it quite a few times.
Four times.
And I have a feeling that several of us are going to get halfway through this round and be like, of course, I kicked 75 feet to the left. Like that's that's what happens out here. So we all get to that dark place. But it was interesting. And so from my perspective, from the content perspective of also our podcast, right? We're helping beginners. We're focused on beginners. There is this shift of, okay, I want to see how Brad bounces back here because it's definitely not like over at this point. Jason has three strokes on him coming out of this, but we all know there is so much golf left to play. We've only played five holes at this point. Three strokes is nothing, especially playing longs here. So we head into six. Brad throws an objectively better drive than Jason. And we kind of talked about of Brad throws a better drive. Jason juices the upshot log. And if I'm playing, I'm thinking to myself, I'm getting a stroke on Jason here. Like, so we heard kind of Brad's perspective on this. Jason, how are you feeling in this moment? You've just, Brad outdrove you, out-approached you. What's going through your head when you're walking? Because Brad and I kind of walked together and you kind of got over to your lie faster than us. What's going through your head on that walk?
When I saw Brad's shot, I'm like, great shot, because of what you just said. It's easy to get frustrated and shank that shot, because I've shanked that shot even though I've thrown a good shot. So I was like, that's an awesome shot, because that's a shot I've seen Brad make like 1,000 times, because that forehand up shot with a putt approach, he's so good at it. And so I'm like, but honestly, I evoked Hunter and a killer. I literally put a killer, it sounds silly, but I'm like, I'm going to make this putt. Right. If I missed it, I missed it. It's that's the way I live. I'm like, you know what? I'm going to make this putt and squash Brad's dreams for at least this hole. And so, but I, when he made that shot, that's the thought I had. Cause before you made that upshot, I'm like, okay, I'm not going to make it. I'll take my bogey. But when you had that, I'm like, all right. Cause you know, for those who know Hunter, when Hunter's in competitive mode, Hunter's a different Hunter than you'll see. Right.
Yep.
And for that moment, I'm like, I'm going to play Hunter, turn that on and see if I can do it. And then sometimes putts just feel good. It's weird. Like Robbie will reference it in a second, because one of my favorite things to say is when I'm playing well, I'll say disc golf is weird. Disc golf is so weird, whatever, because I go so insanely high and insanely low with my scores. Hideaway 9 over last week. And then and I don't think I've ever gone single digits at Peaks Few Longs before. And so but to get up there and hit that putt, and then the confidence went at that moment, the confidence went sky high, because it wasn't a lucky putt. It was a pure putt, pure all the way right in. And I just stood there for a second. Like, and I think I even said like, whatever, like whatever, disc golf is weird.
So he sinks the putt and you can see like the reality for all of us of like, oh, once again, for now, two of the last three holes, Brad has been like, I'm getting a stroke on Jason.
Mm-hmm.
And then he doesn't. So we're heading into the woods, and Jason's drive goes straight into a tree. I mean, to say that it was 40 feet off the tee feels generous.
Nah, yeah.
Brad, what's going through your head? Because you throw your drive and it gets clear far away that we can't see. What's kind of going through your head at this point?
Well, because Jason had the tee box and he hit first available, and immediately I'm like, okay, I'm getting two strokes back here. That was my thought.
Okay.
Because I do like the overhand, like the thumber play for the shorts there. And I'm like, I'm going to do the thumber play, lay it by the shorts, pitch up to the basket, tap in for par. Jason's at least getting a bogey because he was like deep in the woods down on the left. And I'm like, and I've been there 100 times, so I know it's like very hard to get out of there. And I'm like, I got to get I'm getting two strokes. Throw my thumber. Great. It's up there by the, I think it hit a tree kind of early, so it didn't go right by the short basket, but it was pretty close to it. I had an open look to like kind of lay up at the long basket. And so, I'm ahead of Jason. I watched Jason throw a second shot. He hits a tree.
No tree.
And I'm like, I'm definitely getting two strokes here.
Yeah.
So he hits the tree, and then he kind of like throws up by this stump. And I said, quote, you aren't going to like that. And then I was like, okay, there's my two strokes right there. Cause you got to pitch over the stump, which is a death putt. I'm like, he's just going to lay up. There's five. I'm getting a three. There's my two strokes. I'm back in the game. Well, he throws that up by the stump. You aren't going to like it. And then I take a pole cat, because I'm like, this pole cat's very straight. And I just try to pitch it and like let it scoot up to the basket, because it's like kind of on a downhill. And I don't know whether I released it weird or what happened, but it like went right on me. Or no, it hit and then bounced right on me. Literally hit the stump and like hit Jason's disc and landed right beside it. And I was like, oh, aren't going to like that. And so we get up to that shot, and Jason's like, all right, whatever Brad's doing, I'm doing it. Brad, if you run it, I'll run it. If you lay up, I'm going to lay up. Whatever you do, I'll do it, just for camaraderie's sake here. And I was like, because realistically, it's not that far of a putt.
Right.
It was like kind of like a pitch over the stump. And I'm like, okay, worst case scenario, I'm going to hit the front of the chains here and just kind of fall down. Well, that didn't happen. I believe I airballed that putt, if I'm correct.
Yep. Probably, yeah.
Something happened. I ended up on the down over the hill.
Yeah. So
and,
yeah, you go down the hill and he's far past it. And Jason is a fast player, no doubt. Like, Jason is a fast player, and especially that's, I didn't realize, like, this is why I love these kind of things, is because hearing Jason go on hole six and be like, I'm gonna put the hunter mentality on, I'm gonna go kill her, and I'm gonna hit this. Because then when you stepped up to that putt on seven, I was like, oh no. What happens, Jason?
Well, because I had that killer mentality, like, let's step back to a little bit, because I, walking up to that, my whole disc golf is weird, whatever, I literally said, it can change on this hole. And my very next throw hits a tree. I'm like, just like that. And then my very next throw hits another tree, just like that. My third throw was actually from where I was at, and the disc I had in my bag, a good upshot. I was very happy with that upshot. And when I saw it where I was at, I was like, oh, I could make this putt. Again, the confidence sky high, and so that's why... Again, I gamemanship, I tried to talk Brad into it. Brad's a grown man. He's going to do what he wants, right? But I tried to talk him into running that putt because I knew, it sounds very arrogant. Let's be clear. I know I'm being very arrogant, but like I had that, the confidence was here.
Yeah.
When the confidence is here, you're like, I'm going to hit everything.
Yeah.
And that's why I said, if you run it, I'm running it. And I have no fear. If you want to lay up, I 100% will lay down. So if Brad had laid up, I absolutely would have laid up, taken my bogey or my double bogey bogey at that time. Mm-hmm. Been double bogey, sort of laid up and hit it. And then when Brad missed it, I'm like, I'm making this. Like, there's no doubt in my mind I'm gonna make it. Never missed, center change, dropped right in the basket.
Yeah.
So confidence is an amazing thing. It's like a drug.
Mm-hmm.
When the confidence is there, I'm like, wow. Again, I played so bad last week to have me up this high. It was fantastic.
Yeah. So I ended up, taking a double bogey. And
this is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Instead of gaining 2 strokes on Jason, I lost a stroke on Jason.
Yeah.
So there's a 3-stroke swing in my mind that actually happened.
Yeah.
So for mental sake, not great for that hole. Not great.
Yeah. And that's where I mean, really, it was like, okay, these next few holes are going to have to go something interesting in order for Brad to really feel like, okay. Because you could see, you could feel it in the air. You could feel that moment. So my question is for Brad, do you feel like at this point in the game, you came into this trying to play more match play through the first 7 holes versus scoring the first 7 holes? Or was it like, because that was kind of my thought, was maybe he's trying to match play this. And it just got away from him because of that. I've got to beat him on this hole. I've got to beat him on this hole. And then the mountain just kept building in front of you.
Yeah, I think 2 things I probably did wrong. Number one, I was trying to do the strategy of like, because we had to use every disc in our bag off of the tee at least 1 time through the round. So by like the woods, I wanted to kind of have most of all of them done. So, like, I was just trying to cycle through all of those best that I could. So, I don't know if that was the wrong play because it did help me at the end, I think. But I was 100% match playing. And I think that's even hole one, if I really think about it. I was like, okay, when I, like, was one down already, I was like, shoot, I'm already behind on hole one. Because I was trying to match play. Because I think I said it, I felt pretty okay in the woods. Like, I felt like maybe that's where I could, like, maybe pull away if I was going to. And I wanted to match play through the first, like basically the first 9 as we're learning our discs and everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. It did get away from me. Cause I think at that point, probably hole 7, I really doubted if I come back, it's only going to be because Jason like gets bad luck on the course, like gets rollaways, tree hits, like chain outs. Like that's how I'm going to win. Not because.
Yeah.
I'm going to like beat him at this point. It's going to be luck kind of.
Yeah. And that's where, and where the reality hit me was we got to hole 10. So hole 8 and 9, they both par. And it was interesting in the, like, so we get to 9 and Brad has a death putt. Jason was short went two over stable. What did you throw on?
Nine was the berg, and I was way short.
Yeah,
it's the jump putt hole on shorts, but it's much further down than I thought it was, so I was way short.
And so Jason lays up. Brad lays up because he has a death putt, and he was like, live to fight another day. Here we go. So then we go to 10.
Yeah. I was like back nine, new me.
Yeah.
You know, that's where I was trying to be.
Yeah.
And I immediately abandoned that, and it was a mistake.
So with 10, Brad has another death putt.
Through a great drive.
Great drive.
Theme of my round. Through a great drive, but.
Yeah. Through a great drive. Jason also throws a great drive. And was Jason's 15 feet at most, 15 to 12. And so it's like, okay, Jason's also looking at a little bit of a death putt. And by a little bit, I mean, he's looking at a death putt as well. Huge drop off behind the basket. And I think I actually asked on camera, Brad, is this one that you feel like you have to run because of where Jason is? I think you were like, yeah.
Yeah. No, I did say yeah, because I was only 20 feet. I wasn't super far away. Yeah.
No, you weren't super far away.
And I had an open shot. Like, yes, it was death putt behind me. Probably any other day I would lay up, but I already knew I was so far behind. You were going to get a birdie. Like, you had to putt with your eyes closed to get it. You probably would have made it yesterday. You were putting that well. So I'm like, I have to try for this birdie so I don't get too far behind. Spoiler. I'm saying air ball. I probably clipped the chains on the right, but I rolled down the hill and that was annoying. Recovered, came up the hill and had a tap in for a bogey, but still again, another two strokes.
Yeah.
That I think at that point, match play style, I felt pressure. So I had to just like try.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so and from there, we'll let people continue to watch because this video, that moment is the first putting green moment for the video that's on the in the bag channel.
Mm-hmm.
So I want that. Y'all can kind of watch it play out from there. So now I want to zoom out. Right, we've gone really deep because
okay, we'll tease.
Yeah.
I made a bit of a push
for sure. For sure. I think, and that's, and even I think it happened on, I want to say it was 12 or 13, where we were like, hey, let's just birdie out. Because that was even said on the card of like, what if we birdie out? And that's where I think, Brad, you were like, well, I'm going to birdie out. I hope Jason does it. And then there was a great little pan of the camera back and forth moment. So going through this, reflecting back, those were the powerful moments that I felt like it really would enrich your viewing experience for people to be able to be brought into kind of that mentality. So we've done three bag drafts. I want to go to Jason first. Did you feel more, less, no difference in pressure of having your bag drafted for you in playing versus drafting your own bag and playing? What was like, did you feel any pressure difference there? Of was there almost like even like a write off of, oh well, I didn't pick these discs, so whatever?
No, I don't think so. I think it was the pressure I put on myself was because I don't think I drafted great. I drafted true to self, because in hindsight, if you look at our bags, Brad drafted pretty much stable to overstable. I drafted neutral to understable because that's how we play a lot of our disc. And I think in hindsight, as we came up there, like, I don't really, this is my normal bag, but like, you need the stability of disc. You need some of those things, that the functionality of that. And so I think I had more pressure because I think I had more pressure on me because I drafted it, because it was relying on me for picking the disc. And I think I did good. Some of the disc I love, like I used to throw the Berg and I love the Berg. So it's in the bag now and it's not leaving. I've never thrown the Wizard, but it's definitely staying in the bag. The F7 could come and go, the Insanity could come and go. But I guess now that I say that out loud, it was definitely more pressure on me. It's easier if someone else does it. I don't blame them if I play bad, but at least, hey, I get to try something else. But this one, I actually had to put thought into it and choose those things. The disc that's in my bag that's going to stay there forever, or not forever, for a while, is the Crave. I threw it once, hit a tree. So I only threw the Crave once yesterday. But now that I'm picking up a forehand, it's my forehand disc. But the one throw I did yesterday, I hit a tree, and I'm like, that's the only throw I did that Crave the entire time. So in hindsight, it's funny that disc I like so much now, But in that round yesterday, I threw it once and it was a bad throw. Me, not the disc. But I'd say more pressure in hindsight because I controlled my own destiny on that. Whereas other people choose it for me, it's almost fun. I can see what I can do.
Mm. Yeah. I'm processing.
Yeah. Well, I think for me, I think we do best of five. You let us know in the comments. I would like to have my bag drafted for me because I think I make bad decisions for myself.
Okay. Okay.
If I'm being honest. I don't think I chose. I think what I chose was fine. Like it wasn't like it like hindered. I just played bad yesterday. But I would be curious, like Robbie, if you drafted a bag for me. I'd be curious if Jason drafted a bag for me non-spitefully.
I would not draft it spitefully.
And I would just be curious to see like what that looks like, because I think we all think we know our game, but I think those that play with us or see us play probably know it better.
Yeah.
Because they don't have the pride aspect or the, oh, I like to throw this because it's cool, or I think this is best for me mentality. They can like look at it through like a filter, if you will, on what reality actually is.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there is a moment, right, where there are discs that we try to push that we're like, oh, yeah, this disc is fantastic. This is incredible. And those who play with you were looking at it going, I do not think this means what you think it means. I do not think that is actually a great disc for you. You achieve okay results with it, but why are you as comfortable with that? If you are as comfortable with that disc as you think you are, it probably should be going better for you more often. So there's curiosity there. Brad, walking into this, my question for you is, because I don't live here, so we obviously spend a lot of time digitally, but for the two performances that I've been there filming, obviously not ideal for you, not going how you wanted them to. The one that I wasn't there, and it was the guys were with you, and they were a part of it. Do you think that there is any world of me being there has an adjustment to your game of like, I wonder, like in any form or fashion, positive, negative, do you think that you play different because I'm there for any particular reason? I don't think it's like a nerves thing or anything like that, but are there any thoughts there?
I don't know. I think other than I put a little, I think a little extra pressure on myself to play in my upper third around you because I, again, the only real experience at this point is you like seeing me play pretty terribly, I would argue. So I think there's like a little pressure of like, hey, Robbie, I want you to see like I actually can play good disc golf. You know, I actually am okay at it. And I think maybe there's just some, I think in the bag draft battles, maybe there's a little pressure because like I want to have our fans feel like I give them good advice or I throw well for them. Mm. I think there's some of that probably. And I just need to play, you know, because when I play, I have a good time and I play pretty decent for like my skill level. So I think I put a lot of pressure on myself to perform. And I think that's fine. I usually do okay with that. But then when things start sliding, I have a lot of trouble recovering, I guess. And I also have this toxic trait of like, and it's where Jason was asking me to run or lay up. Like when I'm on camera, I think I make decisions I would not normally make. But I'm trying to have fun, but then I'm actually just making it the round worse for myself. So I really don't think it's you. I think it's me putting pressure on myself to perform a certain caliber, I guess, when we do these things.
Yeah. And I think that's completely fair as someone who obviously makes content quite a bit. Mm-hmm. There's extra pressure that comes on camera if you give advice on the internet, your performance is judged. Like wholeheartedly, your performance is judged. Whether that's good or bad, probably mostly bad. But yeah, especially because what I do appreciate is I think that pressure for you, Brad, will alleviate the more that you continue to do these. I'm testing lives like bringing people in and showing those throws off, because at the end of the day, people will know like, okay, you're throwing this way, things like that. Like, mm-hmm. not that there's any need to fabricate any information anyways, like that would not help us on this show at all. Mm-hmm. But just getting more comfortable throwing a camera over and over again for mm-hmm. our audience already should alleviate that.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not too worried about it. It'll come with time. And I think the positives are like, I think there's a lot of positives that happen. Again, I think my off the tee is getting pretty decent. Like, and I felt pretty confident even though I wasn't playing like putting super well. I feel like a little better on my drives. I feel like I'm like slowing down. I feel like my form is slowly getting better. So it's cool. Cause everybody can watch that, you know, and hopefully what everybody sees is like, hopefully everybody's game is just like, you can find some inspiration like, oh, well I throw that shot better. Or like, hey, I do this pretty well. And you know, Brad has a podcast and he doesn't throw that as well as I do. Hopefully you can find some like comfort and some inspiration and some like, you know, confidence in your game by watching me be a goofball and like throw bad shots and throw some good shots too. And I'm here for that. That's what I'm here for. Oh. I like that. We like being transparent, and that's probably as transparent as we can get.
Okay. Well, to wrap it up, y'all, it's been a good episode. I want to say thanks again to Jason for coming on. Brad gave an idea of someone drafting for him. Jason, I'm going to put you on the spot here. If this goes to a best of five, fourth installment for the draft, what would be, do you have an idea on how we would draft differently? What challenge would be put on the draft? Whatever it may be. Anything coming to mind right off the bat?
Well, I would say one of the challenge would be we draft each other's bag, because I've only drafted my bag, and I think I remember, you may have drafted my bag or Robbie's done it each time, but I could draft Brad's unspitefully, as you said, mm-hmm. and then he would draft mine. But maybe it's not the tough thing we have, and this is the reality if you watch it, like if we don't want to draft too many discs, because none of our films will ever capture us throwing all those discs, right? I hit the nail on the head. I threw through Crave once, so no one really got a feel for the Crave. So if I'd say it would be like a five disc bag or something like that,
yeah,
and maybe doing nine holes at Falling Creek Yellows or something, because some of those are scoreable.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
We're going to watch a lot of throws, but something like that, a course where we're playing 6 to 8 holes, but that it has enough of diversity, really long holes and shorter birdieable holes with the mid-range, something like that. So it gives it more open. So a lot less technical shots,
yeah,
but lets you get out there and really throw the disc. Whereas this one, other than 17, there's no hole where we really bomb it, right? Mm-hmm. And that's a hard hole because it's uphill, the tee box is slanted, all those things. I'm not a long thrower, but I still like to throw hard sometimes, you know? So that'd be my thought of a future one, is something like that. We're more than one hole, we get to really rip it and just see what happens.
Yeah. As far as how we draft, I don't know. You know, maybe give us some ideas in the comments.
Yeah. We would appreciate that. Well, Brad, Jason, we got a new disc in the warehouse this week.
Oh yeah, we got a lot. So we have Heck Yeah MVP hitting the site. So custom stamp MVP. We have Echoes, we have Rhythm, Fission Rhythms, and we have Glitch. The Heck Yes stamp, previously only available on Rocks in the Connor box. We brought them over to MVP. They had some availability. We're just trying to get as much MVP as we can. Great disc, fun to throw. So we're excited about those. We also have Glide is a Lie Bergs. Jason threw the Berg all over my face yesterday. So make sure he's putting one in his bag. Make sure you put one in yours if you're a Berg thrower. If not, maybe give it a try. Great thing is we have Foundation Care now. All of our U.S. customers, maybe you're like, hey, I've always wanted to try a Berg, but I don't want to be that guy. Hey, get buy one on the site, have it shipped to your house, try it out. You can try it out for up to 30 days. If you don't like it, you can fill out a form online. That gets you in touch with Jason, and then we'll get you swapped out for something that you really love. So very easy decision there. What else am I forgetting, Jason?
We had that drop today as of recording, but this is coming out tomorrow on Friday. We had
fractal prodigy. So we had the PA3 and the A2. Yeah. In fractal, which feels like, I'm not a big prodigy guy though. The A3 surprised me. Like, I've always thought it felt terrible, but I was very happy with how it threw. Like, when I juiced it on hole six, I threw it great. I just juiced it too much. So that's on there. MX2 feels amazing. We were talking before we came on air. I need a more stable mid-range. It's not a beefy mid-range like a Pyro or something. The MX2 may be that disc for sure. We have the other stuff. We have some random MVP that's kind of going up as we go along as well.
Like orbitals, watts. We have quite a bit.
Robbie's disc.
Yep.
Right.
We have a small amount of Robbie C. Pigs and Robbie C. Birdie Blend Wizard. So I know people have been asking about those. They're going up. There's a handful of them. So make sure you just grab them while you're thinking about it. Pause this. Go get them. Come back. We also have, I don't have mine on.
I don't have mine on either.
Sorry. We're calling them Foundation, like college hats. They're a blend between like a flat bill and like a dad hat. They're super comfortable. You've seen them in the videos. Y'all have been asking about them. They are live on the site right now. Make sure you check those out. Connor said granddad hat. I think
that may not be the best selling pitch, Connor, though it does. I do like it.
Hey, I love
hey, who doesn't love that grandpa, you know?
Yeah, fair enough. Okay.
And then if you pre-ordered swarms, they're getting shipped out, but we'll have some swarms going up as well. And there's a handful of like Anthony Barella commemorative swirl venoms and literally just very few drones. Help me out here.
Champions Cup drone.
The previously wooded major.
Yep. So those will be up as well. We had big week for drops this week. I'm also forgetting about one other item and I can't think about it. I think it was Prodigy I'm thinking of that you said already. So yeah, a lot of stuff. Make sure, again, recently restocked is your best friend. Make sure you check it out. Foundationdisc.com. Hey, if you get it, you like it, it's not good and you're not putting it in your bag, Foundation Care. Remember that. Don't be afraid to try something. Try it out for 30 days. If you don't love it, contact us. We'll help you find something that you love. But if it is good and you, get it home, you throw it in the field, you go out and, bag draft challenge your buddy and he throws something all over your face, you know, make sure you pick up that as well. And if it's good,
keep it in the bag.
We'll see y'all next time.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.